This episode is made possible by Nielsen. What even is TV anymore? I don't know. I guess it's phones, tablets, refrigerators, perhaps? So make sure you're looking at everything. Check out Nielsen's Upfronts, New Fronts guide for the full picture. You can get that at nielsen.com. It's right on the homepage.
Funneling people away from the New York Times websites, which makes ad revenue harder to generate. And then why would people subscribe to the New York Times if they can access most of the information that the New York Times puts out through ChatGPT? It is cannibalizing those revenues.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, March 19th. Evelyn, Yuri, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two people. We start with our senior analyst who covers everything digital advertising and media based in Virginia. It's Evelyn Mitchell-Wolf.
Hi, Marcus. Hello, everyone.
Hello there. And we also have our principal analyst who covers everything advertising, media, and tech based in New Jersey. It's, of course, Yuri Wamser.
Hey, Marcus.
Hey, fella. So it's another morning recording, so I'm going to complain about how difficult mornings are. I got up the other day for a 6:30 yoga class, believe it or not, and I was so proud of myself. I was like, yes. And I got there. I only went because someone made me, and I got there, and it was rough. But then I was like, afterwards, maybe I'll get some coffee. 7:30, I was like, maybe I'll get some coffee, maybe I'll read. I went right back to bed for 3 hours.
Oh, no. Marcus. You
it
did
was
so
such
good.
A failed attempt to be a good person.
I find yoga in the morning is so much harder because you're not like, you know, you kind of stretch out throughout the day. And then when
you
do it after work, you're like,
that's
already
what I said to the yoga teacher. Yeah. I said, why is this even happening? She didn't care for it. Kick me out. Anyway, today's fact. Atlas is holding what on his shoulders?
Do you know, like the
Greek,
world?
Greek
the world, yeah.
No. We've been lied to. Well, he didn't. I'm sure he didn't start the lie. What's that
the
on
sky.
Your shoulders? The world? Basically, yeah. Yeah, the heavens. Atlas is not holding the world on his shoulders. In Greek mythology, the titan Atlas was responsible for bearing the weight of the heavens on his shoulders, a burden given to him as punishment by Zeus after the titans revolted against the Olympians. There are a lot of pictures of him holding the world, but there are some of him holding just like a globe, I guess.
Yeah,
shaped
yeah. Because how do you depict the heavens?
Yeah, it's just there's different symbols on one. Yeah, they all look a bit different, but he's not holding the world.
I blame Rockefeller Center for this. They have a statue of him, and he has the world or a globe on it. So
he does.
I think so.
Liars. That's a tough sentence, though, isn't it? Here, hold the heavens forever. Atlas is like, can I take the jail time or at least appeal? That's rough. But yeah, he's not holding it. I mean, the heavens, that's still a lot. So fair play. Anyway, today's real topic is generative AI's kryptonite copyright. In today's episode, in the lead, we'll cover whether copyright law can stifle Gen AI's world takeover. No in other news today. There's too much. Too much to get to. We start, of course, with the lead and this generation's big copyright battle, pitting journalists against AI software that has learned from and can regurgitate their reporting, writes Adam Clark Estes of Vox. In his piece, he references P2P file sharing site Napster, which made it easy to download music for free before the days of Spotify and Apple Music. Record companies were quick to say, not so fast, and in 2001, a federal court ruled that Napster was liable for copyright infringement. In a modern version of this case, the New York Times is claiming that OpenAI trained its model with copyrighted Times content and did not pay proper licensing fees. Mr. Estes says the consensus of casual observers and legal experts is that this New York Times lawsuit is a big deal, since not only does the Times appear to have a solid case, but OpenAI has a lot to lose, perhaps its very existence. So, Evelyn, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on the idea of copyright lawsuits downing OpenAI?
I mean, I think they could, but I don't think they will.
Okay.
I think it's more likely that copyright lawsuits will kind of reshape what a viable business model looks like for Gen AI companies, including OpenAI. You know, the initial business model started with scraping every available piece of content from the internet, regardless of whether there were permissions in place or not. And then the next steps were to use that data to train the model or models, put the product on the market for free, foot the bill for the computing power, get potential paying clients hooked, then charge for access. And that's where we kind of are now. And there are a lot of ways that the resulting subscription model can look. I don't think it necessarily all falls apart if OpenAI or any company decides to or becomes legally obligated to pay creators, publishers for the content they use to train their models. Training data just becomes like a larger component of OpenAI's overhead. And then the cost of operating a Gen AI business goes up. Then that cost increase gets passed along to end users the same way that the price of takeout goes up when the price of ingredients goes up. How much profit margin OpenAI will be willing to sacrifice under those circumstances to keep costs palatable for its subscribers, that remains to be seen. And I know it's not as cut and dry as I'm making it sound, of course, you know, like training data isn't just used in perpetuity, it's ingested into the model. Like GPT-4 can't unlearn what it has learned so far by training on the unlicensed New York Times data. And so this gets into the whole transformative conundrum of the fair use doctrine. I just think the outcome of these lawsuits will reflect both the pervasive ideology of innovation for innovation's sake and the fact that Gen AI is an existential threat to the publishing industry as we know it today.
I mean, you touched on it. A lot of interesting points. One of them is the question of how much is OpenAI willing to pay news outlets? And there is a report in The Information from January saying OpenAI offered some media companies, they say, as little as between $1 to $5 million to license their articles for use in training its large language models. Yuri, when we were prepping for this episode, you were saying big question is how do you make money whilst paying those very copyright fees?
Yeah, and I just want to agree with what Evelyn says. I don't think it's existential for the AI industry, but I think it's going to be existential for some AI companies just because the business model will change with these higher fees. And I think some of these suits are going to, well, I'm not a legal analyst, but to me, under fair use, it seems like a lot of these companies are going to have to pay higher figures for some of this data. And that's going to make the viability of some companies a little harder to sustain and probably raise prices for AI services. So my guess is $1 million or $5 million or whatever they're offering a company like New York Times, it's just not going to cut it.
Yeah. Although they probably want to pay for permission than pay for forgiveness, because some of these fines could be company ending fines. It depends on the size of the company, or you're right. But the Times arguing OpenAI is making money off of content and costing the paper billions of dollars in statutory and actual damages. By one estimate, given the millions of articles potentially implicated and the cost per instance of copying, the New York Times might be looking for $450 billion in damages. Knows Mr. Estes of Vox. You mentioned fair use, Yuri. That's a huge part of this. And so just to set the table on fair use, or talk about it for a second, according to the Copyright Alliance, they say fair use permits a party to use a copyrighted work without the copyright owner's permission for purposes such as criticism, comments, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, or research. However, as the University of Illinois points out, if the purpose, on the other hand, is to make a profit or for commercial gain, that would weigh against fair use. And Nilay Patel of The Verge explaining that since the law can't predict what everyone might want to do, there's apparently a four-factor test written into it that courts can use to determine if copy is fair use. Any courts get to run that test any way they want, and one court's fair use determination isn't actually precedent for the next courts, you'll be pleased to know. So there's Evelyn, when it comes to fair use, I mean, just anything's possible.
Yeah, I mean,
in terms of what could happen as an outcome.
Even just the idea that precedent is not necessarily established when one court goes through the whole exercise of looking at the facts of the case and determining whether fair use applies, that makes this whole can of worms even more complicated here. Mm-hmm. And I think that commercial side of the equation, like you mentioned, it really does weigh in the New York Times' favor here. And when we think about also, there's another kind of element of fair use, which is the product that is kind of the result of the copying, is it kind of replacing the original product in terms of market share and the ability of the original producer of the content to continue their business and continue to make money? Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is also not so much in OpenAI's favor, because even if you consider, like, the training data aside, there's also this existential question of LLMs, ChatGPT, whatever have you, funneling people away from the New York Times and other publishers' websites, which makes ad revenue harder to generate. And then why would people subscribe to the New York Times if they can access most of the information that the New York Times puts out through ChatGPT? It is cannibalizing those revenues.
And there is one more element of fair use, which is just, is it public information? So if the New York Times is reporting on some public news, you know, they have a much harder case. But if the analysis is being reproduced, then they have a much stronger case.
Yeah.
But I think the impact on the publishing industry is that the long tail of publishers is really going to be hit. They're not going to get the traffic from searches nearly as much, because the answers are going to be there for this public type of information. Mm-hmm. And it's going to just be a lot harder for them to have that differentiated, non-public information type of information that they could sell and defend against.
Yeah, there's this question of what if regurgitation is eliminated? And this is when OpenAI generates text that matches Times articles word for word. The Times provides lots of examples in the lawsuit against OpenAI, but OpenAI says regurgitation is a quote-unquote rare bug that they are quote-unquote working to drive to zero. So I don't know if that's going to change any judges' minds. OpenAI's solution to this battle with the Times is to pay the copyright owners first, as we talked about, the way they've struck licensing deals with folks like the Associated Press and our parent company, Axel Springer. But Yuri, do you think the industry is likely at this point, if you had to, I guess, speculate, land on the side of the New York Times in terms of the Gen AI copyright debate, or on the Axel Springer and Associated Press side?
I think there's the industry is going to diverge here. So the big publishers that can charge subscriptions, I think they're going to try to get as good a deal as they can or sue OpenAI. I think the smaller businesses, smaller publishers are kind of screwed, I think, because they don't have the resources to fight nearly as easily. I think their strategy is more going to be AI optimization, try to be one of those links that the AI bots then link out to when they create their single answer, and possibly, you know, create, you know, joint industry groups that have collective payments or something like that. But I think in terms of the New York Times strategy of like driving a hard bargain, I think that's going to be limited to a few large publishers, and the bigger publishing landscape, the long tail, is going to have a much harder time doing that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I also looked at it as the industry was going to diverge, and I kind of segmented the divergence among publishers versus advertisers and ad intermediaries. So from, I think, because publishers are going to feel very differently than advertisers and intermediaries, obviously, like you just mentioned, Yuri, they have different stakes in this. I think, though, that most publishers want the New York Times to win, because if the New York Times wins, all publishers win. And there is that matter of like precedent doesn't hold here, but, you know, very few publishers have the financial resources and the brand recognition to fight this battle in court. And if the New York Times wins, that would establish some sort of, it's not precedent, but something in court, some sort of reference material for publishers to point to and say, okay, well, we know how this went this time. Do you really want to gamble OpenAI? Do you really want to gamble Google on going to court again to ask for forgiveness rather than permission? So the New York Times, if it wins, that's a big deal for every publisher. When it comes to the way that Axel Springer, the AP, have approached partnerships with OpenAI, you know, we all talked about that the compensation is probably not enough to recoup what they're going to lose in ad and subscription revenue in the long run. It's better than nothing, obviously, but it is only for those large publishers, like you mentioned, Lori, and there are those tons more publishers who have no shot at striking those kinds of licensing deals. So if New York Times wins, there's going to be kind of a positive knock-on effect for the whole publishing industry. And one of the points that Nilay Patel made that I thought was a really good one is that if it's not the New York Times now, if the New York Times loses, other publishers will come in to fill this lawsuit void, because it is such a huge deal to so many publishers. The Authors Guild, you know, if we have time to talk about the music industry, their artists are all in on this. So I can see this playing out in courts, regardless of whether this one case goes in the New York Times' favor.
Mm-hmm. One final point before we go to the kind of creative artist side of this argument. There was an Atlantic article by Alex Reisner citing William Patry, a former senior official at the US Copyright Office, saying a blanket ruling about AI training is unlikely. Instead of saying AI training is fair use, judges might decide that it's fair to train certain AI products, but not others, depending on what features a product has or how often it quotes from its training data. We could also end up with different rules for commercial versus non-commercial AI systems as well. But Evelyn, to your point about the artist side of the argument, Mr. Esters of Vox was explaining that the New York Times are not the only party suing OpenAI and other tech companies over copyright infringement, as a growing list of authors and entertainers have been filing lawsuits since ChatGPT hit the scene, accusing these AI companies of copying their works to train their models. AI companies have argued their language models learn from books and produce transformative original work, just like humans. Developers are also suing OpenAI and Microsoft for allegedly stealing software code. Getty Images is suing Stability AI, the makers of image-generating model Stable Diffusion, over its copyrighted photos. Yuri, how do you think AI copyright is going to affect the creative arts?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very similar argument to what we were just talking about for publishers. I do think that the creative arts can argue distinctiveness and non-public use a little more clearly than news stories, for instance. So I think there's a strong case there. The challenge is, you know, the artists will have to band together, unless you're Sarah Silverman or someone like that who is suing. There will have to be some sort of, you know, group class action suit that has resources to fight this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to your point, Yuri, facts cannot be copyrighted. So there is a difference here between news stories and the more creative, like, I mean, we read an article where Hozier was quoted as saying AI can't really qualify as art because it's missing that human component. And I think that element here is really interesting. And if there were to be some sort of collective action, like you mentioned, is a key difference between, you know, the New York Times suing OpenAI and a group of artists suing Stable Diffusion or whatever, because there's like this component of the human experience that a judge may be more sympathetic to, right? There, it's like the risk of our very humanity here, which is, it's intense. And it is, I think it is at stake. You know, artists are a really big part of what it means to be human. And if the financial incentive to create art is kind of flipped on its head, if artists cannot sustain themselves by doing their craft, what does that world look like? You know?
It seems like plagiarism is certainly a problem. There's a new report from plagiarism detector CopyLeaks that found 60%, 60, of OpenAI's GPT-3.5 outputs contained some form of plagiarism. Notes Megan Marone of Axios. We saw the Hollywood writers striking in part over the potential for AI to take over their jobs. Maybe it's musicians' turn next. I know Hozier in that article was cited as saying that he would go on strike, well, stop making music or some other form of strike. Another interesting part of this as well, a US district court judge recently ruling AI-generated artwork cannot be protected under copyright law in a major legal decision, saying that human authorship is a bedrock requirement of copyright. So that being another component here. What happens if you make a piece?
Let's just make things more complicated. Why not?
With Gen AI, I know. That's what we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests for helping me pick through this incredibly complex issue. Thank you to Evelyn.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you to Yuri.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, Stuart, and Sophie, the rest of the podcast crew. And thanks to everyone for listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. Tune in tomorrow to hang out with Sarah Lebo as she speaks with our Chief Content Officer, Zia Daniel Wigder, and Principal Analyst Jasmine Emberg as they come to us live from Shop Talk in Las Vegas.